Hello, everyone, and welcome to hour number five of the Wolf King Podcast Marathon for Autism. My name is Sean Burns, and I'm here to introduce to you a show that's going to be joining us for the next hour, Soundography. In the meantime, we want to encourage folks to go over to the website at bit.ly/WolfKingAutism to help the organization that we're working with today, the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. This is a group that helps people with autism to advocate for themselves in the workplace, in school, for housing, and all different types of life experiences that you and I might take for granted. They just help them along the process to be able to do it for themselves. And it's a wonderful organization we're trying to support. And you just go ahead and fill out the form there. That website, bit.ly/WolfKingAutism, will take you directly to their donation page. We ask that in honor of name, you put Wolf King Marathon, and in honor of email, put in Wolf King Podcasts with an S at gmail.com. That'll help them to know which donations over the weekend are coming from the marathon. We're going to be here till tomorrow, Sunday at noon Eastern, but for the next hour or so, we're going to turn it over to Mr. Brian Ibbett and Mr. Hammond Chamberlain for their new podcast, Soundography. And gentlemen, thank you so much for doing this for us today, and welcome to the marathon.
Thank you
so much. Yeah, great to be here, and it's such a great cause, and really happy to be part of it. Lowering gently the needle onto your musical education. You guys are getting to hear a preview of a brand new podcast that's going to be coming out this summer called Soundography. Just got funded on Kickstarter. We're looking at some stretch goals we're going to be announcing later today. Who knows? Maybe we'll announce it during the show. We could totally do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And but this is going to be an example of the kind of show you can expect. Now, normally on Soundography, we would take a band or an artist, lesser known. Maybe you know them from maybe one hit or a song that was popular at a time in the past, but we're going to go through their entire biography as well as provide you with a starter playlist of 10 songs that that are the primer, the thing you need to get into that band. And this show is something that I never in a million years would be able to do alone. I needed somebody who loved music as much as I do, who loves bands and knows stuff about stuff as much as I do, if not more. And that man is Hammond Chamberlain. Thank you for joining me on this, Hammond.
Oh, I'm excited to do this. And I've got theme music ready so we can jump into our...
Play that. Let's pretend this is a real show.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. And Soundography, folks.
And that's where the theme music is.
Sorry, I hit the wrong button. It's like another co-host you work with.
Right, yeah, you should know what that's like. Greetings and welcome to a preview episode of Soundography. I'm Brian Ibbett, as I mentioned, and with me as always, Mr. Hammond Chamberlain.
Hey, Brian, I'm really excited to do this, and I thank you for joining us on this this good occasion for fundraising for autism.
Me too. This is, like you said, this is such a great charity event, a great reason to do this. And you know what? Looking outside at the weather in Colorado today, there was one more reason I'm not doing anything else today, is because it is blizzard conditions outside in Denver. So I'm happy to be inside where it's warm talking about music.
Well, today we are going to do kind of a spinoff version of our show. We typically do an artist, but this time we decided to do kind of a theme and a genre. So, Brian, why don't you break the news and tell them what we're doing?
Sure. We're doing, I was going to try and say this in my best voice for this kind of thing, musicals. So, it's my Nathan Lane. We decided to talk about musicals because there is such a wide variety. When you talk about movie musicals and you think about the classics like Music Man and
Singing in the Rain,
stuff like that. But then you think about the modern stuff. We're going to talk about a lot of the modern stuff on the show. So I don't want to do any spoilers, but there's such a spectrum of that. And you're going to find people who like specific things and don't like other things. Like, you know, they want the chorus line kind of stuff or the Evita, Chicago, you know, that sort of thing. But you're also going to find the people who like the new kind of rock opera kind of stuff.
You know, it's funny, too, because the idea of the production number, the big third act production number or the end of the act excitement, tension builder.
Right.
It comes from musical, and it's something that we see in film every day. And it's this crescendo. And it seems as if that idea of telling story and pushing emotion with music has transcended the musical and actually moved into scoring and the way people tell stories with music.
Totally. Yeah. And you find it seems to come in waves, right? Like you had all those great, what was it, Bernstein musicals of the past. And then there was kind of a resurgence in the 70s around stuff like Grease and
Godspell and Jesus Christ Superstar.
And yep, like exactly. Yeah. And then kind of a resurgence of late with, Baz Luhrmann, who we're going to talk about, you and I think might have opposite views about that.
Really?
And I think there's been a version of The Producers in every single wave. of the modern musical.
Well, it seems as if there's been a form of musical since film started. I mean, as soon as we got Noise, we started getting, you know, the talkies, we started getting some sort of musical.
Right.
And and for me, I need my musical to be different than a song or movie that has just lots of music in it. Because
that's a good distinction to make right off the top of the bat, right? Because it's like you've got the stuff like Saturday Night Fever and movies that are known for their music, but the music only serves as kind of the backdrop for the action and not a story device, a thing that pushes the story forward.
Yeah, it needs to be able to convey some sort of emotion or help push story forward in song.
Right.
And these, you know, the biopics we've had lately, like 8 Mile and Shredded Compton, they have tons of music in it, and I'm not saying I don't like them, but they don't qualify as musical and as a musical. So that's the interesting part for me, and that's I think we needed to draw that line early. Mm-hmm. So it's there.
Yes. Yep. And then there's another distinction that you have in your notes here that I completely agree with too, which is the differentiation between a biopic and or a biopic. You know, I've always called them biopics until recently when somebody said, "No, it's a biopic. It's a biography picture." It's like, okay, yeah, but you say biography, you don't say biography.
Yeah.
So why would it be?
It's not biography.
Right, exactly. But the ones you came up with, 8 Mile, Straight Outta Compton, Walk the Line is a good example.
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
Yeah, where the music is performed and sung by the actors in the film, but it's not – they don't tell the story through that music. You know, they're singing their songs. It's you don't see Johnny Cash or you don't see Joaquin Phoenix shoot a man in Reno just to watch him die, even though he's singing those lyrics. Whereas in a musical, you'd see him shoot a man in Reno just to watch him die.
And that's an interesting part because now they've taken the works of popular artists and turned them into musicals like Mamma Mia. And there was one about Billy Joel recently.
Yeah, Moving Out. Yeah.
And they've
Green Day, American Idiot.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. I don't know where it goes, but it's home to me, and I walk alone.
Side note, complete tangent. The documentary making of that musical is awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
find it and watch it. It's great.
Interesting. There you got a documentary about a musical, about an album.
Yes. But that is Inception.
The documentary adapted from the musical, adapted from the album. Wow.
But, you know, that's interesting, too, because then at some point you might actually have a musical based on the works of Elvis, where there is a man getting shot in Reno just to watch him bleed.
Sure, sure. Right. What are some other kind of differentiations? I mean, basically, if the characters, let's break it down. I think what to us defines a musical. If the if music is A, featured predominantly in the movie, B, the actors are the ones singing the music that you hear in the film, and the story is told through the use of traditional acting and singing.
Yeah, and then we could really split hairs by splitting into like operetta, like, you know, where it's right. all music all the time, like
right.
Miz or, you know, Miss Saigon or one of these other things with like straight right. music all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think for qualifying for this conversation, too, we had to look at there's traditional musicals that had been on stage mm-hmm. and then they've made their way to film, which is a traditional way of going.
Right.
But then we have the other ways. So they've gone from being regular movies and then turned into musicals like
right.
like The Lion King or
you Producers know, is a good example of this. Uh-huh, where it yeah. started out as just a Mel Brooks film and it's made its way back. That's the coolest thing about that one is started off as a movie, made its way to a musical, came back to movies as a musical. Little Shop of Horrors did the same thing, I believe.
I think so. The black and white one.
The old Jack Nicholson and right. Shrek. You know, there's a musical version of Shrek, although I don't know if they're making a movie of that. So I guess that's the qualifier is it has to have made its way back to film. Is
that what we're saying? Yeah. Yeah. <Okay. laughs> So let's talk Baz since we brought it up.
All right. All right.
You go first.
All right. I'm on the side that says that the Baz Luhrmann films are musicals, are considered musicals, especially Moulin Rouge. I think Moulin Rouge is probably the best example of this, maybe less so with stuff like Australia and
Romeo and Juliet,
Strictly Ballroom, because the story in Moulin Rouge is told through the narration in the music. And regardless of the fact that these are all songs that have been released before, and that's another thing I definitely want to talk about is musicals where the songs have been released before. Jersey Boys, great example of this.
Yeah, uh-huh,
yeah. I guess that's a biography, but...
But is it still though? It would be like a musical biography at that point because.
Right. Except they're not telling, you know, Walk Like a Man isn't telling the story of them learning to walk.
True. Yeah, it's true.
So, but songs that were
I just instantly went to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer with one foot in front of the other.
That's a musical. Where was I? I can't remember where I was going. Jersey Boys, right. So that differentiation between Baz Luhrmann's stuff where the story is told through the use of music that's been pulled from this source and pulled from that source and kind of mashed up together to serve as narration, for me, still qualifies it as a musical.
And I still agree that they are musicals. It's just that my tastes mm-hmm. Make them seem more like staged, very high production value mashup videos.
Gotcha. Right. Sure.
And I really like Moulin Rouge, and I kind of rediscovered Children of the Revolution and the Show Must Go On. I kind of rediscovered those songs because mm-hmm. of that musical, which made me go back and listen to Queen and, you know, some of this other stuff. So I it's not that I don't qualify them a musical, but the idea of it being, I don't want to call it lazy musical writing because they still had to put a ton of work in it. But as far as someone who likes songs that are specific for a type of story I have a hard time with those. And I'm not saying I don't like them.
But they're a different thing for you than the other things that we're talking about. Sure. No, that totally makes sense.
Singing in the Rain and Moulin Rouge are not the same type of musical to me. And I think that even like something like Repo, the Genetic Opera falls more into the Singing in the Rain camp than Moulin Rouge, even though Genetic Opera is almost a horror movie musical.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it's less about the genre of the movie and more about the source of the music. I think for me that defining line, and they're like you say, I'm with you. I consider them all musicals, but I do see them as something totally different. So, the music being pulled from other sources and used in Moulin Rouge is different than music being specifically written for Singing in the Rain, for Repo, the Genetic Opera, things like that.
Baz Luhrmann's almost the musical version of DJ Earworm.
It kind of is, right? Yeah.
one of the things that I wanted to bring up is that the musical really did affect the way films were made early on, because they would find people who had specific talents, like people who were good swimmers and people who were good dancers and people who were good ice skaters. And they would build musical production numbers around these skills to build an entire film around them.
And I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who did this all the time. Was it Bubsy Birksy or
Busby Berkeley?
Busby Berkeley. See, I was close. I had a couple of the letters right. But yeah, like he had those, you know, it looked like you're looking down at synchronized swimming at the Olympics.
Yes.
And with music set to it. And it was
50 women making flowers with their legs.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Which, you know, kind of a side note, great tribute to that, by the way, is the music video for Let Forever Be by the Chemical Brothers. Absolute tribute to Busby Berkeley. I'm never going to remember how to say that. Busby Berkeley, but total tribute to his style. If you've not seen that video, it's brilliant.
Yeah. And I think that there's a part of me that wishes that the silly production number would come back.
Sure.
But I also know that I think as an audience, I might be in the minority.
I think that I bet you sometime in our lifetimes, we are going to see somebody look back at films like that and try and make a new modern one. The funny thing is, from seeing those, I don't remember there being like a story or a star or anything like that. And I may be just thinking of it as a collection of vignettes from a bunch of those different movies that may have been all arranged into something that I saw, like a Busby Berkeley tribute or something. But would you be able to get away with it in this day and age and not have a George Clooney at the front of this, or a, you know, Scarlett Johansson leading the Busby Berkeley dancers or something?
Well, I think we've got Hugh Jackman, whose theater is well known.
Sure.
We could pull in Obi-Wan Kenobi
Neil Patrick Harris. You're talking about Ewan McGregor.
Uh-huh. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So there's a cast that can be put together.
Wow. Didn't Hugh Jackman did the Australia thing with Nicole Kidman, didn't
and
he?
And also I think he did Nine. I don't know if it was in the movie, but on stage. Oh, I know he did that. Right. Too, so, yes. I mean, he's got theater chops.
I'm thinking Nine was, I'm forgetting his name.
Scary looking guy. I know who you're talking about now.
Yes. Not Daniel Day-Lewis, but somebody of that caliber of acting.
Yeah.
But
Boy from Australia. Was that the other one that he did? I can't remember. Anyway, we've got actors that have enough musical chops. I mean, look at Into the Woods. Mm-hmm. That cast alone could pull off a big production number.
Right. And a lot of them did, and Mamma Mia too. Right.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
There you go. You've got, there's your kind of, your parallel that is not a Baz Luhrmann movie, but does that same thing where it's taking music from a specific source and making a musical out of it. Cool. Those songs all existed before Mamma Mia, kind of the same way that American Idiot, you know, they took the music and evolved a story around it. We Will Rock You, the Queen musical. They took all those characters, Scaramouche and Figaro and all these characters, the Killer Queen, and made a story to kind of fit around. I wish they would make a movie of that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. And do it kind of like one of those, like a Zappa feel.
Oh, that would be so cool. Rock of Ages. There's another one, too.
And I was just about to bring that up because it's weird for me because I'm of a certain age now that I have a hard time swallowing the pill that the 80s is a period piece. Mm-hmm. Because
nice.
Because I was there for that.
By the way, the movie Nine. So remember what I was saying? It was somebody of the caliber of Daniel Day-Lewis. It was a guy by the name of Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh,
so people are yelling at their phones or whatever they're listening to this on, saying, "Brian, it was Daniel Day-Lewis. It was a scary looking dude who was a lot like Daniel Day-Lewis because his name was Daniel Day-Lewis,
who would later grow up to be Lincoln."
That's right. I drink your milkshake.
Anyway. So I think we mentioned, kind of glossed over the 70s as a period of kind of a musical revival. And there was a lot of them that were turned into films. There was Hair.
Aquarius.
which had like Dawning of the Age of Aquarius and How Can People Be So Heartless, or what's it called? Easy to Be Hard.
Okay.
And then we had, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar, Godspell, Grease. Lots of really, really strong musicals came out in the 70s. And one of the ones with this pre-existing material that we're talking about is the Bee Gees did their movie with an all-star cast. It had Alice Cooper and
George Burns, Steve Martin.
Yeah, it had everybody. And they did Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Right.
And that was my introduction to it. And
wait, your introduction to what?
Sgt. Pepper.
Really? You hadn't heard that album? So that was your first hearing of the album?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
And so when I went and bought it, I have to say I was a little disappointed that Alice Cooper wasn't singing on it the first time, because that's what I expected.
Huh.
And
interesting.
Yeah, I mean
that's such an iconic version of Come Together, though. Come Together with Aerosmith. What was the Alice Cooper one? Come Together by Aerosmith transcended that movie.
Yes, like, it did.
That is, you know, people can hear that song and not have any idea that there was that horrible Bee Gees movie. Because who was the fourth one? Because they had the three Bee Gees, but then the fourth guy was like Leif Garrett or
I can't remember, but yeah, it was someone who we've kind of forgotten.
Yeah. I'm looking it up because okay, I've got to remember.
Well, while you're doing that, I can tell you that I personally...
Peter Frampton, that's what it was. I forgot. Yeah, Peter Frampton. All right. I take it back. I like Peter Frampton, okay. So I can't...
We didn't forget Peter Frampton.
No.
But I can say that their version of Strawberry Fields Forever is still one of my favorites from that movie. I think it's a really good version of that.
Okay.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to strawberry fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry fields forever.
You won't hate me for it.
I won't hate you. No. So, all right, taking Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, we'll just for this kind of this example, let's jump ahead 25 years. This came out in 1976, and I'm thinking about 2001 was Across the Universe, maybe after that.
And that was directed by the same lady who,
2007, so.
I think... Don't quote me, but I think that the Across the Universe was directed by the same lady who directed Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Yes, Julie Taymor. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And she was just coming off that movie when she started working on Spider-Man.
Oh, so you know, Sony's talking about doing the new Spider-Man movie, right? After he makes his appearance in Civil War, they should adapt Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark into a Sony Pictures musical.
Oh, gosh.
And you said,
am I alone in this?
You just too would love
wants
it.
To see this? Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, Julie Taymor. But yeah, so Across the Universe. Again, it's a film that does that same kind of thing that the Baz Luhrmann movies do, that the
Mamma Mia
does, where it takes an existing band's catalog, picks and pulls bits that seem to work in a narrative sense, and then turns them into real characters, like, you know, Mr. Kite and, you know, all the characters basically from, I guess they're not, are they? Oh, no, it is. Jude is the main character, Jim Sturgis, who I kind of get confused a little bit with Ewan McGregor. Jude, and then who's the woman is Lucy. So, yeah, they're total.
Oh, yeah, they're lifting.
It's total. They're total. The characters are just like the Queen musical and Mamma Mia and stuff.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because there are lots of things, like we've talked about earlier, there are lots of things for me to really like about this. And
sure.
I know the songs already. There's no effort for me. I can already sing along.
Right.
But I still like, and it is an original story, But I like the original song that's tied directly to the story instead of kind of shoehorning story into a song that already exists.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure.
And then we have this resurgence of concert films that also, I mean, they're not musicals, but there's a crap ton of music in them. I mean, we have Katy Perry's concert video, our concert movie, where the songs kind of line up against some of the emotional beats of the film.
Oh, which, this is like the, right, the This Is My Story or whatever it was called, something like that. Yeah, I can't believe we're going to bring up Justin Bieber, but didn't he do, there was something that was a Justin Bieber
film? Yeah, he did. It wasn't as adeptly done, because with hers, she has a storyline running through about this tour and the things that happened on the tour.
Sure.
But then they kind of punctuate some of these emotional beats in the film with songs from the tour concert done. Okay. So it's not pushing any emotional done. It's kind of like putting a giant emotional bow on some of these.
Gotcha.
They're hitting.
So not the narrative, but a related tangential
emotional beat. Yeah,
sure. Makes sense.
And it's really well done. And my kids, I mean, it was a perfect movie for my kids to go to. There's nothing in it to be objectionable. They knew all the words. It's bright. It's colorful. I mean, No One Gets Crucified, which, you know, going back to the 70s musicals of Godspell and Jesus Christ Superstar, that happens. Right. So you have to worry
about it. Okay. All right. Well, let's, you know, we're talking about that. Let's talk about something that is kind of the evolution of that. I didn't see it. Maybe you did. But it was Metallica Through the Never. And that was a movie from 2012, 2013.
Not only did I see it, I owned the special edition in 3D.
Okay. So having seen this, is this a – because it's a fictional story that's punctuated by a concert, a Metallica concert that's happening during the story, right?
Yes. Uh-huh. It's got this – what happens is it basically follows this, you know, stagehand PA guy that shows up and – he's asked to go get a bag, and it's about his probably drug-induced visions of his journey while he's going to get this bag for them. And the whole time it's kind of set against the music of Metallica and concert footage while they're kind of telling this story. Right. And again, it's not that they're more character singing than just the band. But again, they are kind of pointing at musical, emotional beats as they go through the concert as he's going on this journey. So,
okay,
it's very similar to Katy Perry, but not quite as personal.
Quite the level, sure, right? Okay, interesting. I'm gonna give you a really quick, think fast kind of question.
Okay.
So we've got, you know, Mamma Mia by ABBA. We've got, or featuring the music of ABBA. We've got the We Will Rock You featuring the music of Queen. Of course, American Idiot doing the Green Day thing. Across the Universe doing the Beatles thing. What band or artist currently performing right now would you love to see a film adaptation of their music? You know, taking characters from their songs and turning it into a 2-hour film narrative.
Are you trying to make me say something? Because my first answer, Dream Theater, Metropolis 2000. It's already a concept
album. I wasn't trying to lead you there, but okay.
It's already a concept album, or Spockbeard Snow. Both, either of those. I would stand in line for months to see either one of those.
Cool. I was looking
Kevin Gilbert's Shaming of the True.
Oh, see, that would be great, right? I mean, that one's – that, and you probably thought that's where I was leading.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to lead you to anything I really wanted to throw my answer out, which is Bruce Springsteen. I think
that's a good one. Yeah,
the music of Bruce Springsteen just lends itself perfectly to this, or Bob Dylan. Somebody,
titles for that one.
Yeah, you would. Okay, here's something. This is talked about timely today. I was in line at record store day. Today was record store day, and in line behind me, a couple of guys were talking about, and I should look up the news on this because it's really cool. But Bob Dylan apparently has just signed an agreement to license his music for adaptation into film, each song separately into adaptation for film or TV. And here it is right here. The Time Out of Mind TV series. So this is just a couple days ago. But Amazon is developing a TV series where each episode would be a would use the theme and the music from a Bob Dylan song and characters from that Bob Dylan song.
So we're talking episodic musical?
Episodic musical, exactly. That's why it's relevant to what we're talking about.
That is timely. That is really interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's going to be written, directed by Josh Wakely, Australian. He says that Dylan has given him carte blanche to use any of his 600 plus songs, and each episode would be an adaptation of a Dylan song, which I think is brilliant. It's so cool, like little mini musicals. Yeah.
Oh wow, that is really kind of a cool. I'm thinking two things. It's a cool idea, but it's also kind of a ballsy idea.
It is, sure.
That's the kind of episodic TV that it's going to take some people some time to swallow,
right,
and get.
I'm just hoping that maybe we could get William Shatner for the Mr. Tambourine Man episode. Have him play Mr. Tambourine Man.
And see, the hard part for me was to stay legit and not cheat, because there are so many musicals out there that are stage or concept musicals that haven't been quote unquote turned into movies, but there have been like concert films made of them. Right. And I'm like, ooh, Chess technically is on DVD. Oh. I could pick One Night in Bangkok.
Sure.
But it wasn't, you know, it's
a DVD of the stage.
It's a concert film. And that was cheating. One that I'd love to see a version of in any way would be Assassins, because that's how I learned about American history of Assassins was Assassins.
I had no idea about that at all. No.
Yeah, it's a great musical. There are two versions of it. There's the initial Broadway recording, and there's one that came out, I'd say maybe 10 years ago, that has Neil Patrick Harris playing Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
cool. It's really good. One of the things I needed to bring up was one of my earliest movie memories. I think my mom told me the first movie I actually went to see was Tora, Tora, Tora. But one of my earliest memories is this movie called Lost Horizon. It came out in 1973. And it's a musical, and it has a lot of really fun songs and lots of really good songs in it. Like, I don't even know how to describe them. It feels a lot like one of those classic Disney musicals, because there's kids and they're singing and there's the women that have that very typical early 70s, late 60s musical voice.
Right.
And it's a lot of fun. And I think that was an early indicator of the fact that I was going to like musicals, because that's one of the first things I saw.
Wow.
I've
seen the name. I've heard of the film, but I didn't realize that it was a musical. Oh, Bacharach and David. Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Olivia Hussey, Sally Kellerman, John Gielgud, Peter Finch, Michael York. This is a really cool cast. How come I've never, it's interesting that I had no idea that this was a musical. Very interesting.
I actually had to buy my mom a region-free DVD player to buy her a version of that film from like Amazon UK.
Oh, really? Is it not available?
It was a gift. Yeah. It wasn't then. I don't know if it is now, but I had to go to some pretty extreme lengths to be able to get that for her, because it's one of her favorite musicals of all time. Huh. And I remember the CD came out a number of years ago. It was like in a limited reissue. And so I snatched it up as soon as I could and gave it to her. So.
Now, is this an adaptation from a stage play, or was it a...
I think it's actually a musical adaptation of a movie that came out just a few years earlier.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Look at that. There you go. 1937, actually. Wow.
Oh, so...
A Frank Capra film. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's... Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Being a, you know, Bacharach and David... production. I wonder if any of the songs, because that's another fun thing when you're dealing with music, is people know particular songs like Que Sera Sera, and they don't realize it came from The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Uh-huh.
Or
T for Two is from a musical called No, No, Nanette.
Okay.
Which is one of the
interesting. Yeah. So just the origins of all these things. I wonder if there are any Bacharach and David standards that we know together that that came from this. I'm looking through the list right now and I'm not recognizing.
One of my favorites is "The World Is a Circle." It's a silly little song that she sings. The lead actress sings with a group of kids.
Uh huh.
But it's just a fun, silly, happy song.
Cool. Very cool.
Let's throw it back to Sean for him to do his so he can pitch and talk about what we're doing again. Sean,
yeah, yeah.
I am. Thank you, guys. It's been very interesting so far. And so glad to hear my favorite Across the Universe mentioned. I love that movie.
Oh, good.
And if you guys are enjoying this and you want to help out with the cause that we're looking to support through this 24-hour marathon, head over to bit.ly/WolfKingAutism, and that's going to link you directly to the webpage for donations for the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. What this is a group that helps folks with various different autism spectrum disorders to advocate for themselves in areas such as workplace, home, housing, schooling, anything where they need help to be able to get the things that they need. You can donate on their website, put in Wolf King Marathon, in the in honor of email, put in Wolf King Podcasts with an S at gmail.com. That way they have a way to track all the donations coming in through the marathon. We want to thank everyone so far that's been involved and all the people we have coming up. We're going to be here doing this until noon tomorrow, Eastern Standard Time. So tune in, listen to some great programming, help out a great cause. And want to throw it back over now to Hammond and Brian to continue this very interesting conversation and hope people are enjoying it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yep. So, Brian, I understand that you picked all your songs from the musical Cats, so we can just go like any, right?
That's right. Every song from Cats. No, it's funny because, all right, when we were coming up with this and we were talking about, all right, we're going to do musicals, and there were a few that just jumped right into mind. And it's funny, you start thinking about this, and you're thinking, well, God, I can only think of like two or three musicals that I really enjoyed. And then the more you think about it, the more stuff comes out. And even just looking at this list, I've come up with one. I'm actually going to replace it right now because
I hope which one?
I'm replacing the very last one. Oh, you want to see what I'm going to replace?
Yeah, I was actually thinking you were going to switch your second one.
Oh no, heck no. Are you kidding me? I love that. No, I'm so
actually used that one too, but I thought, no, that's Brian's going to use that one.
I'm definitely going to use that. Yeah. Knowing the two artists involved with that and how much one of them is a personal favorite of mine. All right. So let's, should we go down the list here?
Yeah, go right ahead. You go first.
All right. All right. First one on my list, it's more of a full soundtrack than one specific song. And really, if I were to pick one song, it probably wouldn't be this one, but the song in the movie is Seasons of Love from the film and stage production of Rent.
525,600 minutes. 525,600 minutes. How do you measure?
This was a stage performance that Tina and I went and saw, my attraction to the story and the music came from a stage production that Tina and I saw down in Colorado Springs. Made an hour and a half drive down to Colorado Springs to see this, and I hadn't heard anything about it. I thought it was, oh, great. It's like a musical about heroin. Terrific. I can't wait to see this. Should be really uplifting. And we enjoyed it so much that during the intermission, we'd only seen half of the performance. During the intermission, we bought the CD from the vendor and said, I don't care what the second half holds. We know that at least one of the the discs in this box. One of the two CDs in this double disc set is going to be fantastic. And when they, a few years later, made the film adaptation using 90% of the actors from the stage production, it was really, really cool. And they changed out the woman who plays Mimi with Rosario Dawson, who I would watch in anything. I really, really like her. And she's a great singer. She's a great performer and is perfect for the role of Mimi. So while the song in my list is Seasons of Love from Rent, I think if I were to say I could only have one song. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. If I could only have one song on this list or one Rent song to listen to forever, I actually think it would be Light My Candle, which is kind of the interplay between a couple of the characters, Mimi and Roger, I think.
You know, it's funny. Rent came out when I was in college, and I was too busy wrapped up in actually working. Like, that was when I was actually working in theater doing musicals all the time. And it was hard for me to discover things I wasn't working on because I was too busy listening to the things I was working on. And, that's when I discovered like One Tin in the Shade and, you know, which is the musical version of The Rainmaker and High Spirits, which is the musical version of.
I'm looking it up right now because it's driving me nuts too that I didn't know this. Blythe Spirit?
That's it. Yes. The Blythe Spirit. Yes. You know, those shows that I was working on when I was in school are just, that was kind of what I was listening to. I was listening to lots of Chess and I worked on Sweeney Todd a bunch and 1776. So the new, when Rent came out, I really didn't get exposed to it. And then when I was older, we rented it and watched it and I really liked it. And I was kind of felt left out because I wasn't around when Rent was a thing and I was kind of living Rent as a thing by myself.
Without the heroin.
Yeah. Without the heroin.
Right. Cool. I forget how we do this. Do we alternate I go down my list. Awesome. Yep. Oh, good. All right. Next up, and this is the one that you were kind of needling me about a minute ago, which is the movie Xanadu. Great example of the musical film without an adaptation of a play or previous movie or previous work. As far as I know, right? Xanadu was its own.
Yeah, I think so. Business. However, I would like to see. I would like to see a modern, like high production value version of it, you know,
holy cow.
In a Broadway setting.
No kidding, right? Oh, yeah. So the song I picked from that is Magic. I am such a massive fan of Jeff Lynne and Electric Light Orchestra, love ELO, and had such a big crush on Olivia Newton-John at the time as well, thanks to Grease, which I did not include a song from, although, boy, I saw that movie in the theaters about 1,000 times. But this movie was utter garbage. Xanadu was insufferable as far as a film, but a soundtrack, I own it on both CD and vinyl because I'm such a fan of the soundtrack.
Wasn't Fred Astaire in the movie too?
Yes. Or Gene Kelly.
Gene Kelly. Yeah. Astaire. Yeah. Okay. In that weird time travel number.
Right. Yeah. So were the Tubes for that matter.
Yes.
Kind of inexplicably, but for all those failings, the soundtrack is fantastic. Not only have you got Magic and the theme song, which is infectious as heck, you've got I'm Alive by ELO, Suddenly, which she sings with Cliff Richard, All Over the World, a great ELO classic. Devil Woman Cliff Richard, yep.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's good. It's such a great album, but yeah, don't if you... If you're coming to this thinking that Xanadu exists only as an album, only as music, and not as a movie, then I envy you. And don't change that perspective. Enjoy the fact that you're living in blissful ignorance that Xanadu was ever a film.
I'm glad that you don't like the movie. It makes I was worried for a minute because when you
oh no
I was actually a little concerned.
Yeah, no, don't be at all. Next up is another one that we talked about earlier. It started off as a black and white movie. It had Jack Nicholson in it. And I'm trying to remember Roger Corman was the director. And then it became a Broadway play. And then from that Broadway play, they made a movie. And that movie is Little Shop of Horrors, which might actually be my favorite musical film. I'm trying hard to think of one I like more than that. It's such a complete package of comedy and really, really good music. Every track on that album is just so much fun. Even the like interstitial stuff that you get from the chorus, the equivalent of the Greek chorus, which are three bouffant wearing women named after girl groups. Like one of them is Chantel, the other one is Ronette. They're all named after like the Chantels and the Ronettes. And you got Ellen Green, you've got Rick Moranis, John Candy, Steve Martin, of course, Bill Murray. Just the scene with Bill Murray and Steve Martin as the sadistic patient and the dentist, the masochistic dentist.
Yeah.
It's just such a great, great combo. And that is actually the song I picked was Dentist or Be a Dentist or whatever it was called.
What did she say?
She said, my boy, I think someday you'll find a way to make your natural tendencies pay.
You'll be a dentist. You have a talent for causing things.
Hey, hey.
Some be a dentist. People will pay you to be.
Really interesting too, because that movie is funny, like laugh out loud,
right?
Knee slapping funny, but it is grim.
It is. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Afterwards you're like, I can't believe I'm laughing at this, but I can't stop laughing at this.
Right. Is this the only time that I'm trying to think if there was ever another movie that featured Bill Murray and Steve Martin together? That's it, isn't it? Little Shop of Horrors.
That might be. You might be onto something there.
Yeah. Crazy. Wow. So there's that. Next one is Cell Block Tango from Chicago. Again, a movie where I was thinking more of the soundtrack as a whole and said, well, what's my favorite track from the soundtrack? And it's Cell Block Tango, where you get the backstories of all the women locked up in prison with the characters. And again, a great film adaptation for a movie that I, or a play that I was unaware of. Other than hearing it named, and knowing that it was popular, Michael Johnson does confirm that that's the only movie featuring Bill Murray and Steve Martin together on screen together. But Chicago, just such a great, again, a great adaptation. John C. Reilly is fantastic. Of course, you get Catherine Zeta-Jones and Renee Zellweger and Richard Gere. Who am I forgetting from that thing?
Queen Latifah.
Oh, Queen Latifah, right. As Mama.
Yeah.
Who kind of runs the jail from the inside.
My favorite song from that one is The Cellophane Man.
Yes. Well, there you go. That's your John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
Right.
That's my favorite song from that movie.
Yeah. And so well done. And it adheres to a style of music. I guess so does Little Shop of Horrors, really, when you think about it. They adhere to a very specific style of music throughout the whole thing.
Well, so does Xanadu, for that matter. I mean, 70s ELO.
Right. I mean, it adheres to the music of the time it was from, sure. But Chicago's got that ragtime 1920s feel, razzle-dazzle and stuff like that. Little Shop of Horrors does that whole 50s thing. So sure. Came out in 2002 and was a Best Picture winner. One of very few musical Best Pictures, right?
Yeah.
As Oliver, I think, was the one before that. All right. Next on the list. Oh, Danny Elfman was involved. Danny Elfman did the music for Chicago. I did not know that. That's super cool.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Had finally, he wrote in something in a different key than D minor.
Right.
I have my own commentary on Danny Elfman. We'll save that for the show.
Wow, that might have to. We might have to throw that into the soundography lineup. Last one was my sudden switch out. It was Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious from Mary Poppins, which it was hard not to pick something from Mary Poppins. It was hard not to pick something from The Wizard of Oz, because they're such classics. They're such, you know. Sound of Music, another one you think of like when you think of movie musicals. But in looking, and when we were talking earlier, I was reminded of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the Gene Wilder one, not the Johnny Depp one, which actually has a pretty good soundtrack, speaking of Danny Elfman, but it is all in D minor. the song from that, Pure Imagination, again, that's a whole soundtrack that I could listen to and enjoy from start to finish. And Pure Imagination is kind of the heart of that soundtrack. It is the sun by which all of the other songs of the planetoids that orbit around it. But Pure Imagination is the absolute heart of that album.
There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.
Such a great soundtrack and such a great, you know, great musical as well.
And they actually use a very similar idea of the Greek chorus with the Oompa Loompas.
Oompa Loompas, exactly. Wow, yeah, it's a good point. Really, I guess when you look at this, let's take Xanadu out of the equation, but Rent has got the homeless people are the Greek chorus of that film, and they do the interstitials about, all right, it's Christmas time, and oh, now it's summertime, and it's, now it's New Year's Eve. Willy Wonka has the Oompa Loompas. The other prisoners are the ones in Chicago. So I guess you've got to have that narrative chorus as part of your musical.
Almost your equation. That's part of the equation in a way.
Part of, yeah, exactly. Not a requirement, but it is you see it more often than you don't.
Yeah. Yep. And that's a piece of theater that's been in since the dawn of theater.
Sure. Oh, yeah. The Greek. I mean, that comes from the Greek chorus. So yeah. It's good. All right. There's my five for your playlist. Let's look at the second half of your playlist.
All righty. So without question, I have two favorite musicals of all time. They're Chess and they're Sweeney Todd. Chess has not been made into a film yet, so I couldn't use it.
Right.
But I will say that. One of my favorite songs of all time is One Night in Bangkok. And I spent most of yesterday looking at covers of One Night and stumbled on some really good ones and some really bad ones.
Sure. Murray Head, who... sounds like just the name of a band, but no, he's the brother of the guy who played Giles on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right?
Yeah, Anthony, and ties into pick number five of mine.
Oh, okay. Whoops, then I don't want to jump into. Yeah. I'm not going to jump ahead.
No, that's fine. And but so I picked Pretty Women.
Dancing pretty women are a wonder. Pretty women. Sitting in the window or standing on the stair.
From Sweeney Todd, because it's a song that you can pull out from the musical and sing on its own. I also like Nothing's Gonna Harm You, which I sing to my youngest daughter. Right. And my wife's a little concerned that at some point when she sees Sweeney Todd, she's going to be mad that I was singing a song based on a musical, from a musical about cannibalism and revenge.
It's so sweet though.
Yes, it is it's a beautiful, beautiful song. And you've got Have sure. a Little Priest, which is this laugh riot song about cannibalism.
Right.
Talk about grim. But it's hysterical. It's a Sondheim musical, Johnny Depp and the lady that always in every Tim Burton movie.
Bonham Carter. Yes. Yep.
They're in it. Sacha Baron Cohen's in it.
Oh, right. Yeah. Pre-Borat, right? Or maybe
post,
around the
post.
Post-Borat? Okay.
And Alan Rickman's in it as the judge.
Oh.
It's really good. And the changes they made to it to turn it into a movie as opposed to stage really kind of worked. They removed the chorus in this case.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
And they made it focus very much on the main characters, and it's really, really well done. And it's one of my favorite Burton films. Actually, it might be my favorite Burton film.
Sure.
What
kinds of characters provided the chorus in the play?
Basically random street people.
Just people. Okay. Yeah. Just people who lived on Fleet Street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. My next one is another Sondheim piece. There might be a theme here, but it's another Sondheim piece, and it's the Into the Woods that just came out recently.
Oh, yeah. Meryl Streep.
What's her name? From Pitch Perfect.
Yes, Anna Kendrick.
Yes, she's fantastic in it.
She is really good, yeah.
And they handled some of... So for me, the first act of Into the Woods is excellent. I love it, the first act. I really struggle with the second act of Into the Woods for many, many reasons that I won't go into, but just know that after Happily Ever After, in the mm-hmm. first act, I'm okay not watching the second act. And they handled some of the themes really well. Like they handled Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf really well. And my choice for the song is the title song Into the Woods, because it really sets the mood. It tells you all about what you need to know about the story. And it kind of even starts defining character traits that you will need to know moving in.
Into the woods, the path is straight, you know it well.
But who can tell?
Into the woods to lift the spell. Into the woods to visit mother.
Into the woods to sell the cow.
To get the money.
To go to the festival.
Into the woods to grandmother's house.
Into the woods to grandmother's house.
It's very well done. And actually having Captain Kirk, who was the other person? Chris Pine and cannot think of the other guy, but it's another.
Not Cumberbatch.
Oh gosh, I can't think of his name. But having them sing Tragedy was great because they sang it so straight and it's such a silly song.
Interesting. I'm scrolling through because I want to see who you're talking about. That's
it was Prince Charming and Prince Humperdinck or Prince, the other Prince.
Billy Magnuson? No, that was the Rapunzel's Prince.
Different guy? That might be it.
Okay.
It's just two princes.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it's Prince Charming and another prince.
Gotcha. Yeah, William Gregory Billy Magnuson.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a silly, silly song, and to see them sing it with such straight faces was great.
Very cool.
I picked one from a classic musical movie. I picked Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and I picked Hushabye Mountain.
Nice.
I think that is one of the most beautiful songs ever committed to wax, plastic, any recorded medium, film.
Wow.
Any of it. I love Hushabye Mountain.
So close your eyes on Hushabye Mountain. Wave goodbye to cares of the day, and watch your boat from Hushabye Mountain.
I think that Dick Van Dyke does a great job delivering it. The setting for it was great. The way it was lit was perfect. I love everything about the way that song comes across.
See, I didn't feel bad about taking Mary Poppins off my list when I saw that you had Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, because I wanted, on one of our lists, I wanted that old Disney, that was Disney, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. One of that old Disney musical represented.
Yeah. And I love Chitty Chitty Bang Bang as a movie and as a musical, but Hushabye Mountain stands out as the song for me.
Huh. That's great.
Here's the one that we both felt like somebody had to have on a list.
Right.
And that is The Time Warp from Rocky Horror Picture Show. As as pop culture goes, this is probably everyone's first thought of when you go to a musical nowadays is name a pop culture
musical. At least at midnight.
Yes, at least at midnight. Again, this is another one where I really don't like the second half. Once they go through Touch a Touch a Touch Me, I'm kind of done with the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it does kind of veer off into some really bizarre places. But that first half with Damn It Janet and the time warp and there's a light at the Frankenstein place and stuff like that is so good.
The title song, science fiction
double feature.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And if you haven't, here's the thing. Tina and I were talking about this again today when we were coming up with my list. And she's only seen the movie when it appears on TV on like VH1 used to show it every Halloween. And I feel like if you have not seen Rocky Horror Picture Show in an audience full of people who are throwing toast and squirt guns in the air and then you haven't really seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Because if I would have seen that movie before, or if the movie would have been, seeing the movie on TV would have been my only exposure to that movie, I'd hate it. I'd never want to see it ever again.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I did see it the first time on VHS. I was just after I had my first ankle surgeries, and I had both my ankles in casts, and I was basically renting everything in the video store because I was laid up for 6 weeks.
Sure, right.
And I remember I'm like, yeah, whatever, get it. And I put it on. And again, I loved the first half. I thought up to Meatloaf showing up, I loved it. And then
but not including Meatloaf? You don't like the
– No, I don't mind. Like I said, Meatloaf is the marker.
Right.
We have a Meatloaf marker. And then once – and then it kind of – like you said, it veers off into, I think – music that isn't as well, it's not as well conceived, in my opinion. And the story kind of falls apart in a strange way.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
And this is all just me talking. I'm not the definitive Rocky Horror Picture Show guy. So, but yeah.
Did you ever see Shock Treatment, which was the guy who played, it was the guy who wrote it. Dang it, and I can't remember his name, or Riff Raff was the character he played in Rocky Horror.
I don't know his real name. Yeah,
yeah. He wrote a follow up. It was not a sequel, but it was another musical, pop culture or pop music musical, and apparently it did worse than tanked. Like
tanked is a flattery.
Like people who didn't even see it demanded their money back.
You know, it's one of those boxes that I remember very vividly seeing the box in video stores, but I never picked that one up.
Right. Yeah. I don't think, that might have to be a,
you guys film sack.
I'd have to be a film sack, right? I'm looking to see, I want to see who the director was. It was Richard O'Brien. Yes. Richard O'Brien was the guy.
Maybe and Scott will hate it more than he hated The Saint.
He got a lot of flack for that.
I was one of the ones giving him flack.
Were you really? Yeah. Oh. Come on. You can't like that movie. Come on now.
I do. It's this, you put your tongue firmly in your cheek when you watch it. It's not meant to be serious.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then on that.
We'll move on to my next one.
With that. Yeah. I was going to say with that. Okay. Sure.
So since we're kind of in a theme, Rocky Horror Picture Show is one of these ones that the cult classic, people dress up, they go to the theaters and they kind of interact with the film. The people who made my next choice kind of saw this as an heir apparent. And in many ways, it's kind of taken on a life similar to this. And that is Repo, the Genetic Opera, which was directed by the guy who did a few of the Saw films. And it has Paris Hilton in it, and it's got it's got
Anthony
all kinds
of Stuart Head, who we're talking about.
Yeah, he's the brother of Murray Head. Yeah. And it's a dystopian future, to say the least.
Right.
And it's got, who's the opera singer that's in it? Really famous. She was actually the originator of the role.
Alexa Vega?
No, she's Spy Kid.
Oh, okay. Sarah Brightman?
That's it. She originated the role of the female lead in Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
So she's got some real opera cred, And how they got her, I'm still not quite sure how that worked.
But it's got Paul Sorvino for pizza.
Singing.
Yes.
As a singing genetic mobster.
I think you're the one. Didn't you buy copies of this movie for all of us on Film Sack so we could watch it?
No, I did Damnation Alley and a couple others that you guys haven't watched yet. But
okay. Well, no, this one somebody did buy for all of us, and I'm so glad they did because never heard about it until we watched her Film Sack. And I'm with you. I love this. It's surprisingly really, really good.
I love the music in it too. You separate it from the film and the music stands on its own very, very well and still tells the same story without some of the gory details.
Right.
I mean, there's a moment where Anthony Stewart Head is actually doing a duet with himself with his hand up a corpse, using the corpse like a puppet.
right.
So, I mean, it's not exactly child friendly, but like I was saying earlier, the song Chase the Morning, which is my pick, is my youngest, one of my youngest daughter's favorite songs. She loves that song, and it's got such a great feel to it as far as the way it was composed. Let the Monster Rise is really good. Legal Assassin's excellent. There's so many good songs in here. And frankly, even Paris Hilton's song, which is not great, is still pretty good.
Right.
They structured that song to feature what she could do, which makes her shine in what she can do. Which is what I think good songwriters do when they're doing musicals and they know their cast. They don't do a lot of vocal gymnastics for somebody who can't do vocal gymnastics.
Can't handle it, of course, yeah.
So, and that's what's really interesting about going back to Sweeney Todd is I had no idea that Johnny Depp had the ability to do some of the things that he did in that musical.
If you're going to have an actor who's not known for singing and you're going to have them in your musical, that's the way to do it, right? You cater to the to their limitations, to their... Right.
You write within their range. You write within their natural key, so they don't have to think about it too much.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Pierce Brosnan, Mamma Mia. such a good example of what, you know, not doing enough to like taper the ends of a blunt object like Pierce Brosnan.
Fresh off of James Bond.
Right. Exactly. He's got a license to kill my ears. Yeah.
All right, so that's our list.
That's our playlist. That's great. That's
songs.
That's actually a really good set of 10 songs.
And once again, boy, did we split the musical the landscape in half on our own tastes.
Yeah, we really did. Which is good. This is why, you know, why Soundography is what it is, because you and I are very rarely going to have complete and total overlap. And in this case, we had one song that you and I both picked, and it was really easy for me to change that out for something else. So follow us at The Soundography on Twitter, or just go to soundography.com soon. That website, I think, is coming soon to a theater near you.
All right, Brian. Well, this has been as much fun as the first one. And
yes.
And by the way, Alan Parsons Project is on the Kickstarter page.
That's right. You can hear another actual episode of Soundography right there on the Kickstarter page. Yeah, this, you know, I'll say this, Hammond. This gives me hope about that we're doing the right thing by doing a podcast together.
I think it's great. I it's funny because my wife was mentioning the other day that I feel like it's kismet that I met someone who's as much of a music dork as I am.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. No, you're right. Yes, no, it totally is. Totally true.
And she said, if there's anybody I should be doing a show with, it is you.
Well, thanks. It's my pleasure as well. So cool. So go check it out, Soundography, and enjoy the rest of the great programming you're going to hear here on the Wolf King Studios Marathon. I guess at this point, we will turn things back over to Dice Tomato Slice Potato and Sean.
All right, guys. Thanks so much, Brian. Always a pleasure. I appreciate all the help and support you've given Wolf King since we started out last year. It's been a great honor to have you on as part of this, and we're so happy to help showcase this new show for you guys. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to hearing a lot more of this. So,
cool. Well, thank you.
All right.
Thanks.